Welcome to the Weekly Overtake. This is episode 2. This week we'll be talking about the Bahrain GP for Formula 1 and the MotoGP race taking place in Argentina this weekend. It's a doubleheader. Super excited. We're recording this live on Saturday after F1 qualifying. Taylor and I just settled in and watched that, so we're going to have lots to talk about there. And yeah, tomorrow's going to be a great day with F1 in the afternoon for myself in Europe, and then MotoGP later in the night. So let's get into it.
All right, let's go. Yeah, so this is also before the MotoGP qualifying. So
yeah,
well, not a lot. We'll be able to talk about free practice, but maybe do some predictions on what's going to happen. It's obviously Marquez is looking fast, but we're going to go over F1 first. Let's do that.
Yeah, let's start with what we just tuned in for. So F1 qualifying, I mean, to me, it was very exciting. Sometimes it seems that qualifying is almost as exciting, if not more, than the race, because everyone's pushing, they're sandbagging, they have Mercedes' infamous party mode, and they put that into Q3, and they're really pushing to get it. But there was no catching up this week. Ferrari was fastest through all the practices since Thursday. They've been owning it all. And Charles Leclerc, the rookie for Ferrari this year, raced with Sauber last year, his second full season in Formula One. He led every free practice. He kept that stride going today in qualifying, where he finished number one pole position. That's where he'll start from tomorrow. Minute 27.866, a new lap record for the circuit, actually beating out Vettel's record. So there was kind of a quandary with the tire situation for Ferrari. So Sebastian Vettel had a big lockup going into, I believe, turn 10 during Q2, and he destroyed that set of soft tires. He was also released into some traffic. He was not happy about it. Sebastian is a very vocal driver on the radio. He will blatantly ask, you know, why are we so slow? What is going on? You know, how can you do this to me, basically? So he was upset with his Q2 release. He came back out on another set of tires and did enough to get to Q3, but could not best his teammate, Charles Leclerc, the rookie who is on pole position for tomorrow. Right behind them, the Mercedes team, Lewis Hamilton, getting the best of Valtteri Bottas, barely, but he did. So he'll start P3, Valtteri right behind him. And Red Bull Racing's Max Verstappen will start in fifth. Once we get past there, it's actually very interesting because the rest of the qualifying, I'll just go from 6 through 10. We're looking at a Haas, McLaren, Haas, Sauber, or excuse me, Alfa Romeo, formerly Sauber, Kimi Raikkonen, and then Lando Norris in 10th place. So two races for him, for Norris, and two top 10 qualifyings. But the Haas team looking very strong and the McLaren team looking very strong. One surprising thing for me as well was all Honda-powered Formula One cars made it into Q2. So that includes the Red Bull Racing team, the McLaren Honda team, and Red Bull's, secondary team, the Toro Rosso of Alexander Albon and Daniel Kvyat. They all made it through to Q2, so I think that speaks volumes for what Honda has done this season and making sure that their teams have, you know, good power units to go ahead and race with.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's really important. I mean, that's the whole reason why Red Bull left the Renault power unit behind, because they wanted that reliability. And so, yeah, it's good that Honda is going to give that to them this year. Hopefully that they continue with that reliability. Second youngest pole sitter, Charles Leclerc. That's pretty cool. Happy to see the young guy, you know, second youngest Ferrari driver too ever, which is cool. So yeah, clearly Ferrari found some pace. What do you think that's all about? And especially compared to Australia.
So I think, there were some issues. I think early in the week after the race in Australia, they were talking about the chassis, the way it was set up. Excuse me. So I think early on, there were some issues. Race one of the season, it's hard to hit your numbers, right? The engineers are all working and everybody's calculating. You have three practices. You do testing. That was in Barcelona this year. a little different environment from Australia, which is a street circuit. So Ferrari didn't quite have the setup that they needed. I also think that Australia is a unique circuit with no pure straightaways like we have now in Bahrain and the next race, which will be in China, in Shanghai. So these next few tracks will kind of set the tone and let us see more of these new aero rules and the complete package between the teams. I think Mercedes, I don't know if they got lucky, but they had the right chassis in place, you know, for the race last week around. So yeah, Australia, Mercedes nailed it. They hit on the head. Ferrari missed the target, and so did Red Bull. Red Bull, if you watch some of the analysis and you listen to the interviews and the teams, talking to Christian Horner and the drivers, they were saying the car was a little too stiff. They could have had more power, but they were focused on the reliability of the new power unit. And you can see in the corners where the car was a little bit stiff and, you know, riding curbs and not quite having all the contact they needed to carry those speed through the corners. So while they had a podium finish, they still did very well. It wasn't the best that could have come out of there. So, and it's cool to see, you know, weeks one and two, as we go into the season, everyone's kind of fine tuning their race car and getting it to where it needs to be. So yeah, I mean, it's just a little different for Ferrari. May not have, yeah, they're fast on the straights. We know that. We saw that in qualifying. We saw it throughout practice, but that's room for Mercedes that they need to improve there as well, because lots of cars are quick in the straights. And I think, I don't want to say it's the easiest to be faster in the straights, right? But it's new aero rules, new packages. So making sure you have that balance. You want that good balance between cornering speed and straight line speed to get it done, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I've been reading about Ferrari's, the cooling situation and how even Haas has kind of struggled with finding the right cooling balance. I think they moved those main power unit coolers inboard in the car. And obviously Australia was very hot. So my guess is that, you know, at this night circuit in Bahrain, it's helping them too, because they're not having those cooling issues. And obviously we saw both Haas drivers in Q3 as well. So yeah, that's going to be good. What did you think about Grosjean parking it in the race line? What's up? What was up with that? Do you think that was a deliberate block for Norris?
So yeah, I remember seeing that, and they touched on it in qualifying, and they said that it was under investigation, and more than likely there will be a grid penalty assessed to Grosjean. As of right now, there is not any penalties that have been assessed, but he qualified eighth overall, and I'm not sure where that would put him, but probably, you know, towards the back of the grid. If it's a 10 spot penalty or a 5 spot penalty, that's going to be 13 to 18th, you know, right there in front of the Williams cars holding up the rear. So we'll see what comes of that. But I mean, in my experience, it doesn't stand out to me. I don't remember a lot of Haas teams intentionally blocking or just using that gamesmanship, you know, of trying to get the edge or pushing away a competitor. But he was definitely in the racing line, and that was a scary situation when you watch the replay and you see Norris coming in at full speed into that corner, and that car approaches very quickly, and they both have to react. And you saw Grosjean accelerating wildly out of there, and he's sliding around. And that track was very dusty in free practice. Lots of cars sliding around. I mean, we're in the desert in Bahrain, so it's one of the safest tracks on the circuit, because that there's huge runoff areas, you know, with massive areas of runoff. But it's flat, it's a lot of sand. So if it's windy out, which it was a little bit today, not so much to where it affected the cars negatively, but it was windy and it was blowing some sand on the circuit. And you saw some cars getting squirrely out there on the track trying to get their best times down during qualifying.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know MotoGP kind of struggles with Qatar too, with like, at a certain point, there's kind of this, the dew, there's a lot of moisture in the air. I don't know. I don't remember them specifically talking about that, you know, in Bahrain today, but, yeah, definitely makes for an interesting dynamic. But yeah, I think it's going to be a good race tomorrow. I mean, obviously Ferrari's, I have the pace to win. I would love to see Charles Leclerc, you know, get a victory, and just, you know, maybe have Bottas and Leclerc really fight for the championship this year. But that's me personally.
Yeah. So basically what should happen and what's good for the sport and what's good for all of us, I think, is Ferrari should 1-2 tomorrow. But whether it's Leclerc or Vettel on top, however it boils down with pits or cautions that we may or may not see, I don't expect that we'll see many, but this track does get squirrely. They also added an additional DRS zone. So formerly it was the main straight. You had your DRS1 and the back straight on the paddock was DRS2, but they added another DRS zone between turns 3 and 4. I was online on Reddit reading a bunch of comments and different articles on motorsport.com or Planet F1. And a lot of fans are very upset because turn 4 has been a host for a lot of action in the past, but now with DRS, you know, they did the rule change, the new aero packages, trying to make the cars easier to follow, easier to pass, more competitive racing. Do you really need to add a third DRS zone 2 races into the season? Like, how much are you trying to push this on us, you know? So, I mean, more to come on that tomorrow after the race, but I'm not sure they needed that, you know. I don't know.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah. I mean, my personal opinion is anything that shakes that up, brings the pack closer, I'm a fan of. You know, to me, all of the rules that are in F1 and all of the intricate different, I mean, it's just a lot more complicated than other racing series. I mean, especially MotoGP. So I'm not generally a fan of having a bunch of rules like that. But in Formula One's case, you know, obviously, as I said, we'll see what it does. But I think it's I like it. So,
yeah, I think it will lead to more excitement overall. Whether that's what comes out of that is drama, you know, or wins, or you know, race incidents, or you know, so on and so forth. We'll see tomorrow, but. To reach back a little bit of the teams that finished in the top 10, one of those teams was not a factory team named Renault. So we have Daniel Ricciardo, who ended 11th in qualifying, and Nico Hülkenberg, who did not make it out of Q1 and will be starting P17. Tomorrow during the race, do you have any thoughts on the Renault team or Ricciardo and Hülkenberg and what they can do tomorrow to maybe improve their field position?
I think it's going to be taking advantage of if there's a you know, yellow flag, if there's cautions, taking advantage of those, pit stops, maximizing those pit stops, anything that's like that where you can make up places, that's probably what they're going to have to do. I'm not sure what happened with Hülkenberg. I don't know why he didn't have the pace to make it out of Q3 or Q1. I don't know. I didn't really hear anything about why that was.
Yeah, listening to Ricciardo speak, and he's not quite, I think he just said he wasn't comfortable yet in the Renault. So maybe it's just some growing pains. He's obviously a very talented driver. He's had success with Red Bull. I think Red Bull are actually missing him a little bit more right now with Pierre Gasly qualifying 13th, you know, not making it into Q2. He's been struggling. He was stuck behind the speed bump that was Antonio Giovinazzi last weekend. In Australia, or excuse me, not last weekend, but last race 2 weeks ago in Australia, Giovinazzi had the oldest tires and some damage that he was managing, and he was kind of the speed bump for the field, and Gasly could not get past him, which ended up having a much further back finish in the field than he would have wished for. So, yeah, I think the only positive I could draw from that, the silver lining, I think, for Renault would be you're outside of the top 10. The top 10 teams have to start the race on the tires that they used in Q2. So because Danny Ricciardo and Hülkenberg are outside of the top 10, maybe they can start on a medium tire or a hard tire. Probably not the hard. No one wants to go there. That's very slow. But maybe you can start the medium. You can run a really long first stint, come in late, get those softs, and then compete, you know, for that, you know, P6, P7, P8 area of the field. When those guys have been using the normal strategy and they're running the medium tires late in the race and you have a soft, fresher tire and you can go out and push. And especially with three DRS zones, long straightaways, lots of opportunities for overtaking. I could see Renault having both cars finish in the top 10, depending on what happens, or at least one car finishing in the top 10. I wouldn't be surprised if that happened this weekend.
Yep. Yeah. I'd like to see Ricardo up there and do that.
But, yeah. And at the top, we're looking at Ferrari, they're the clear favorites. It's their race to lose. I think, you know, they have two drivers up front. So what's Mercedes going to do? How are they going to attack? What can be done to bridge that gap and to push them closer or drive a wedge in between the two drivers, whether it's Hamilton or Bottas? I think for Mercedes this weekend, it doesn't matter. They don't care who wins. This is not an individual weekend. This is a team. Let's get up there. Let's drive a wedge between the Ferraris. Let's slow one down. You know, let's play team sports and get something out of this, because Hamilton and Vettel in the post qualifying interviews, they were both visually, you could tell that they were happy for Leclerc. Like, normally if you see your teammate on the podium, there's a little bit of disdain in your demeanor, your face changes a little bit. You can be like, oh yeah, you know, he did great. He was much better than me, this and that. But they honestly both seemed happy for him, which is great. You know, it's good for him, good for the sport. But Mercedes, they're going to try and do something tomorrow. I don't know what that is. Do you think you have any ideas or insight as to what they can do to break that up?
I don't know. I mean, they're clearly lacking some top speed. Toto Wolff was saying how that was, they're clearly not sandbagging. I mean, if they, you know, there was some talk of that before, but yeah, it's going to be clever strategy. That sounds like what that's going to be. But we'll see. You know, I can't, it's hard to say.
Yeah, they're being 0.32, 0.39, so really only 0.4 off the pace, which is not, I mean, it's a decent amount, but it's not unachievable to come back from there. And of course, anything can happen. Another thing, yeah, with this circuit that I think is unique in Bahrain is the fact that it's so wide and flat and the big runoff areas. These drivers fight for every inch, which ends up costing you sometimes, because you can exceed track limits very easily exiting a corner, getting wide. So those curbs, the red and white that you see on the side of each corner, those, yeah, count as track, right? So if you're on the curb, you're okay. But if all four tires, the two insides are the ones to watch, if they go outside of that curb and cut back in, I think maybe tomorrow I would put a little bet on it. I put a couple bucks on it that you might see someone in the field getting a penalty for exceeding track limits, especially towards the end when they're fighting for speed, or that fastest lap that is a new addition this year. Mm-hmm. Everyone's going to be fighting towards the end. I saw some articles on Ferrari regretting not going for it last week with Leclerc in fifth place, 30-plus seconds clear, could have pitted, came out, set a fastest lap. But obviously there's many variables there with a pit stop. Yeah. You don't know. You're risking a fifth-place finish for a point, you know, so.
Yeah, it would seem drastic to, especially if you're in a good place near the end, to kind of risk that for a point. I mean, it's kind of – but if you're in a situation like Bottas was in, you know, where you – they were like, yeah, you got good tires, don't need to come in. And, you know, he felt like he could do it. I mean, yeah, it's good for him. So what's the penalty for exceeding track limits? They just tack that on. I think it's just time. They just tack it on at the end of your race time. Yeah.
Yeah, I think could be, depending on how severe, you know, your actions were. It's the same with, like, you know, they cut corners sometimes, or you go off the track, or you know, you come into a corner too fast. You know, you run wide and you rejoin the pack, depending on where you rejoin or how you did those actions. I think the race director will take a look. It's definitely case by case.
Yeah.
But normally what I've seen is a 3 to 5 second penalty on the end of your final time. So if you finish, you know, say P4 and you're only 4 seconds ahead of the driver behind you, and the driver behind him is a second and a half. So depending on the penalty, it could knock you down a couple positions on the final, you know, on the board at the end of the race. So
at least in MotoGP, it's like, if it kind of depends on, did you, was there any sort of advantage that you gained? If you gained it, if you didn't gain anything, I mean, there's plenty of times where they completely exit the track or they blow a corner. And obviously if they lose places from that, they're not going to, you know, penalize them again.
Right. So, as long as it's, yeah, keep it as much as neutral as you can and proceed with the green flag racing. So let's go into predictions for the race. Who do you got? What do you think? Let's just go with the winner, maybe who you think is going to win, and then your hot take or your surprise picker. Yeah. Who do you think is going to win, and who would you like to see maybe be up there?
Who would I like to see? I would like to see Leclerc win, Verstappen 2, and Bottas 3. Who do I think is going to win? Hamilton. I mean, just number one, because the amount of times that a pole sitter goes on to win the race is, I mean, it's fairly rare.
At Bahrain, it's rare. 6 out of the past 14 have won. So,
you know, less than 50%.
Yep.
And I think, you know, if, but obviously, I think if Vettel stays out of trouble and manages tires and all that, absolutely, he's going to be up there. But I would just like to see the young guys battle. I mean, that's really what I want. I want a late race caution. Bring it all back together, and then just.
Yeah, you need a full-on safety car for that, though. Because they run that virtual safety car in F1, you know?
Yeah.
You know how that works as far as, like, technically, yeah. It's weird the way you're running against a ghost car, basically, right? So you have to stay within the time per sector, so they don't really get to group up. But under a safety car, for real, mm-hmm. out on the track, you know, yellow lights and all, that's when they can get together and get wild and, you know.
Yeah. So that's what I want.
So yeah, what do you got? Leclerc win, you think, and then you'd like to, so Leclerc would be the winner. I think that's a reasonable pick. Obviously, he's at the top of the leaderboard right now, and he's young and hungry. So, oh, man, I don't know. Vettel, he's a four-time champion here. But the thing with Leclerc, and I think this translates very well, and I think, I don't know if it's been spoken about or talked about or written about, but earlier today was the F2 race at Bahrain. Leclerc, you obviously used to race in F2, came up through the Ferrari Driver Academy. It's not a race. It's not a track, that's not unfamiliar to these guys. So the guys that are coming up, the rookies, like you talked about, Leclerc, we're looking at Lando Norris, you know, Alexander Albon. All these guys have raced here before, you know, meanwhile in a different car, but they're not unfamiliar with the track and the layout and the way it needs to be driven. So I think if the rookies are going to take advantage, this is a good track to start showing your strengths and getting up there. Australia is new for a lot of the rookies. They've never been there before. They never raced. So as far as an F2 track that they can participate in. So for me, let's see. I'm going to go with Vettel. I think he's going to take his 5th win. I think it's last week we saw in Australia, last race, 2 weeks ago, we saw Bottas come out. He took the lead. Mercedes gave Hamilton the first pit. They pitted, I think, way too early, lap 13, right? Raikkonen came in first for Alfa Romeo. He started the whole undercut, and he just, once the first guy pits, everyone's afraid, and they're bringing drivers in. They're trying not to get beat, you know? So I think Ferrari will do a good job of managing. I think Vettel will take the win right in front of Leclerc, who will be second, and I'm going to go with Bottas, 3rd on the podium. So top 3, Vettel, Leclerc, Bottas.
Yeah. All right.
Let's shift gears and talk about some MotoGP.
All right. Yeah, so obviously, again, this is coming between FP3 and I guess really FP4 and then qualifying. But we saw, obviously, this is a post Ducati swing arm tire cooler / aero device fallout. FIM court ruled it legal. which, you know, I think is true. I think that's good. I think now that opens the doors for the other manufacturers to copy. I mean, it kind of really wasn't all that fair to Ducati because they had to give up some crucial technical data. You know, it came out that they've got data that it cooled the rear tire by 7 or 8 degrees, which, you know, for that could be a significant, you know, game changer for in a race situation.
Is it actually was a tire cooler?
It actually was, but yeah. Gigi Delinea did concede that, you know, there is a secondary aerodynamic effect. But again, that's natural for anything that's sticking out in the wind. I mean, so really, and honestly, it was really more that the other manufacturers, it's like they didn't want to penalize Davi, right? They didn't want to take away his win. They just wanted the rules clarified officially. And so, yeah, that happened. And so I think by COTA, we're going to see, you know, definitely the top teams introduce that to some effect. But, you know, even in free practice, I think Davi and Petrucci were both playing with having it on or not having it on. Like, I think Davi went on FP3 or FP2 without the tire cooler on. You know, he didn't even put it on until warm up in the last race. So, you know, I don't necessarily think that it's like a must have for him. He's pretty smooth. He probably doesn't struggle with overheating the rear tire as much as Petrucci would or Miller. But yeah, so we saw some really good pace out of Miller. So speaking of Ducati, he was up there, really right there behind Marquez, most of the field free practices. But
yeah, I'm looking at FP3 right now. So Marquez topped FP3 after being only eighth in FP2. So Jack Miller right behind him, 0.206. And then looking at Danilo Petrucci for the Ducati back in fifth. And the next Ducati was Davi. But Davi had an incident or a crash in FP3.
Yeah, he did. He was coming in after a fast lap and blew the first corner. And actually, he dropped pretty quickly into his lean. So I don't really know what was up with that. Could have been just kind of a got off the track, off the racing line, and got into the green part of the track and just lost it. You know, I mean, Argentina is not a very popular place to race. So they were talking about how, yeah, the track was really having to come into its own, get cleaned off, get some more rubber down. I heard them say that they had completely washed the track of all rubber before this weekend. So again, through all this, I mean, they've been laying down fresh rubber. So yeah, it wouldn't take much to get off that line and then just kind of dump it.
Shortly we'll see the qualifying, right, and some track evolution, and then tomorrow even more so. So you're saying Argentina is not supported by a lot of other racing series? There's not much that goes on there as far as.
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, I don't think it doesn't nearly get the action that the European tracks do, and
right,
not quite as maintained as much, but, you know, and so I don't know if you remember last year, with what happened, obviously we have the forecast is spots of rain, possibly rain all day tomorrow. You know, last year what happened with Jack Miller was the only one that started on the grid in his original spot while everybody else was.
I do remember that race. Everybody was, yeah, that was
way behind.
Super weird. Yeah.
Yeah. So obviously that could introduce a whole new dynamic, you know. I think
you just got me more excited for the race because I do remember now, and I just looked it up, and now I see Jack Miller standing all alone in P1, and literally four rows behind him is the entire field.
Yeah,
just like a ghost town.
Yep.
Yeah. That was a great race actually last year. Yeah.
Yeah, and so it was a wet race. So yeah, and last year Crutchlow won, Zarco was second. Alex Rins was third. I mean, so that's the great thing about the wet races.
You can dodge a ball, right? I mean, there could be one of those. Well, can you speak to flag to flag racing, which is different than in other sports? So that's something that I first learned about MotoGP a couple years ago when we were watching together, and I was like, oh, wait, they have to just, you know, it's flag to flag. So can you speak to how that works and how that's a little different from other series that you see?
Yeah. So obviously MotoGP is a sprint race. You know, there's typically no coming in and pitting or doing anything and going back out. So in flag to flag, if there's changeable weather during the course of the race, at some point riders come in and they don't swap tires. They swap complete bikes. Right. And so this is, you'll see riders practice this thing where they'll have a bike set up and they'll come in and they will sometimes just not even touch the ground. They'll just hop right over to the other bike and take off. It's fairly rare in MotoGP, but it does happen and it makes it extremely exciting. You know, it's easy to mess that up. You know, especially if it hasn't been practiced well, or if it's kind of a rookie rider or something. Mark Marquez is famously very good at that, of course. Yep.
And when the back of the field, you'll see a lot of guys, if there's a chance or they're like, oh, there's rain on turn 12, a lot of the guys in the back will come in, they'll make that change early just in case. They're banking on the fact that, oh, it does get wet, we're on the better tire, we already have the pace, we're on the bike, and then everybody else at the front has to work their way forward. So like last year you said, I remember some of the guys at the front of the pack nursing those tires and it got a little squirrely, and you know, mm-hmm. It was actually a really good race last year. So if the weather is the same this weekend, then I'm pretty excited for tomorrow night.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I know. And Miller is really good at that. Miller is one of those guys who will stay out there on slicks when it's raining, or he'll basically push it as long as possible. Maybe banking that, a dry race line emerges. It doesn't actually dump as much rain. You know, he's kind of that guy who takes that chance because in a lot of ways he's, you know, some of those satellite guys, that's their chance to get that podium or get that win. And so, yeah, it makes for super exciting racing. I hope it rains, or I hope it's a flag to flag. I mean, that's like, there's nothing better than that, honestly. I mean, yeah, don't get me wrong. I love hot, dry racing where it's just, you know, the fastest guys just battling inch to inch.
Just maintaining and being smart on the bike and not wasting your tires too early or pushing too hard. And that's the crazy part, is there's just so much, skill, technique, finesse, I would say, is the word that just goes into it. You know, where you gotta pick your spots, pick your battles, right? As they always tell you, pick your battles. So you gotta know when to show them, know when to fold them, I guess. So basically, yeah. I'm very excited for tomorrow. Like, this is spring, the sun's out, the weather's turning. Not for you, right? You had some snow, you said.
Of course, yeah. Midwest type weather.
Good old weather. But tomorrow's going to be a good day. What are your predictions going into tomorrow? Do you have any predictions? I mean, who's your guy?
Well, it depends. You know,
pick a manufacturer, I guess. That would probably be the safest way to go for tomorrow for the weather, you know, variables.
If it ends up raining and they all start on wets, you know, on rain tires from the beginning, I think you'll see Miller up there. I think you'll see Crutchlow up there. If it stays dry and Marquez has clear track, you know, it's pretty hard not to say that Marquez is not gonna just run away with it, because in most of the field practice, for the free practice sessions, he was sometimes half a second up, you know, on these guys. I mean, Marquez dominates at this track. Again, it all depends on what the weather does, but so I think you'll see Miller, Rins, hopefully Dobby's up there.
Well, you said Rins, right? So back to last week when I was talking about the Suzuki team, so I'm looking at the FP3 times. So the first one you see is Alex Rins in 15th and Johan Mir behind him a little bit, Oliveira 16th and Johan Mir 17th. So what, yeah, maybe Suzuki just had a big bang opening session where they had great race pace and they were hanging with the field. I mean, more to come. Qualifying hasn't happened. The race, we're not there yet. But sometimes, you know, the free practice will dictate, you know, the layout, the lay of the land, you know, for the actual race. So,
yeah. Well, and I think, the Autodromo Termas do Rio Hondo, it's got a lot of, it's got a few big straights, that the Suzuki could hurt the Suzuki, you know, I know they're lacking in top speed. Honestly, this whole thing about Ducati being horsepower kings, whatever Honda did to their engines this year, they're up there now.
I mean, it's across motorsports period. Like Honda is pretty spectacular.
So this is definitely easily a track that Honda's going to do well at, as is Ducati. But yeah, you know, again, we saw Yamaha struggle with traction. There was a shot of Vinales coming in, and you can tell exactly what he's talking about with hand motions, where he's just like, as soon as I get on the throttle, the back end just, you know, it just goes. He's like, I can't even touch the throttle, and he just looks so fed up, and which is, gosh, that's so, it's unfortunate because he's just, man, they've been struggling with that a lot. I don't even, where was Rossi at? I don't even know where Rossi was,
right now. So FP3 standings, Rossi's seventh and Vinales was up in fourth. So Vinales running a 138.8 and Rossi running a 139.1. So just very, you know, just behind. But yeah, if we're looking at the top, I'll just rattle off the top 10. Honda, Ducati, Honda, Yamaha, Ducati, Yamaha, Yamaha. So that's Morbidelli and Rossi, and then Ducati, Honda, and Lorenzo in ninth. So I think my winning pick this week, it's going to be an offshoot, but Lorenzo's done it time and again, love him or hate him. I'm going to go with Lorenzo winning the race. Yeah, it's a wild card. Ooh,
that's a bold pick.
But I'll take it. And then I think behind him, I'll probably go with Jack Miller. I think he'll be up there in the top as well, even though that's not a factory team either with Miller, right?
No, that is Pramac. No,
it's a Pramac team. So,
Yeah, that's a bold pick. Yeah, Lorenzo is not – he just is not looking healthy, just hurting. So I would be extremely surprised if he is fighting for a podium.
As would I, but I can't pick what you pick because that would just seem like, you know, we're in cahoots and we can't be doing all that.
Yeah, yeah. Nah, I'm excited.
But
yeah.
I think – how about this? So Lorenzo finishes – over Rossi, and I love Rossi. But how about that? Because I totally expect Rossi to be a top five finisher all season. Top five.
Yeah.
Like, easily. So, I'll say Lorenzo finishes over Rossi. We'll just see what happens there.
Yeah. That would also surprise me, but we shall see. It all depends on what the weather does.
I think that's going to be surprised before.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Well, we'll be looking forward to finishing up the qualifying session here real soon, and catching the races tomorrow. So it's gonna be a full day.
Absolutely. So this is, you know, episode two. We are now officially available, proud to announce, on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, pretty much anywhere you get your podcast. We're there. Weekly Overtake, just Weekly Overtake. Please download, listen, share. If you know somebody that loves racing, if you're not a big race fan, but you have a friend or a family member that is, please send this their way. Review, you know, subscribe. And yeah, we're here for you. We want to make the show better. We're pretty much open to anything. The first email that hits our inbox, we'll be psyched when we get when we get some fan input and see what goes on. And we do have some ideas that we're going to expand the show throughout this 2019 race season. So yeah, stay tuned. We're here for you.
Yep. Yep. And so anyways, like, subscribe, let us know what you think. But thanks for watching this week. Thanks for listening. And we'll see you next week. Cheers.
Cheers.